So this is our April podcast with Alex from The Right Place. Hello, Alex.
Hello, Darren. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you. So last time when you was in, we talked about a lot of changes happening for landlords. Today we're going to look into something a little bit in more detail. No fault evictions.
Yes, that's right. You've noticed, Darren, as we were discussing, that the last year's seen quite a lot of discussion in the press and by politicians of what they're calling no fault evictions. So I thought it's about time that we talked about it and made sure everyone understood what that was.
Yeah, last time we went into, I think it was about six or seven different changes in the industry, and we covered this in a little bit of detail. It'd be good to dive in a little bit deeper into
this because
as you said, you know, there's been a lot of stuff in the press recently. Some of this seems to be being used as a political football as well at the moment.
Absolutely, yeah.
So what does it mean? What is a no fault eviction?
Okay, well, we have to sort of rewind just a little to understand what no-fault evictions are referring to. But there were some big changes in the private rented sector in the late 1980s. In 1988, the Housing Act was introduced. And we've seen changes to it and revisions to it since then. But it was a brand new piece of legislation. And one of the things that it set out was legal procedures for landlords to gain possession of their property. And there were two basic procedures, and they were written into Sections 8 and Section 21 of the Housing Act, and therefore they were given the name the Section 8 Possession Procedure and the Section 21 Possession Procedure. Now, the Section 8 Possession Procedure, it has a number of grounds under which a landlord can gain possession of the property. So the tenant needs to have committed some form of wrongdoing, like rent arrears, failing to pay the rent on time, or damaging the property, committing antisocial behaviour, that kind of thing. The Section 21 Possession Procedure, however, it doesn't require any grounds for possession. So commonly it's used by landlords to gain possession when they want to develop the property or sell it, or perhaps even move into it himself. It doesn't require any wrongdoing. So there's a let's say a fault-based possession process and a no-fault possession process. So the Section 21 possession procedure doesn't require the tenant to have done anything wrong. It's just a statement that the landlord wishes to gain possession of his property. And it's that Section 21 possession procedure which has been branded by some of the press and by some politicians as the no-fault eviction.
Yeah. And does this come into play during the tenancy agreement? So say, for example, someone signed up for 6 or 12 months and someone wants to access it, during that period. Or is it a case that, you know, this could be, brought into the equation at any time, say, 6 months, you're looking to re-sign and the landlord, doesn't want to re-sign?
Yeah. Well, legislation was changed just a couple of years ago, actually, just to make it clear that the Section 21 possession procedure can be used after the initial 6 month fixed term,
right.
And that's written into the Housing Act, the initial 6 month fixed term as a protected term. So it could be used after that 6 month period. It always has been, but it was just sort of clarified that if a landlord wishes to seek possession under Section 21, he shouldn't serve that notice on the tenant until they've been in the property at least 4 months, and it's a two-month process. So that the 4 plus the 2 brings it to the 6 months.
Yeah.
So nothing's changed. It's just sort of clarified at what point it can be used.
So just to be clear then, if I signed up for 6 months, then re-signed up for another 6 months, at the end of that 12-month, I would have to leave anyway, wouldn't I, because I'm out of contract?
No, tenancy contracts don't work like that in the UK. So you can sign for a fixed term. It can be a contractual term, 6 months, 12 months, for example. But after that, the contract doesn't end. It just becomes what's called periodic.
Right.
So the tenancy will run either from month to month or quarter to quarter or biannually, depending on what the terms of the contracts are. So no, if tenants don't re-sign contracts, it doesn't bring their contracts or their ability to occupy the property to an end. It just slightly changes it. It's kind of it's a detail, but it just slightly changes how the tenancy works.
So the thing that I'm a little bit confused about is that if I'm out of contract, does this Section 21 still apply?
Yes, because a Section 21 possession can be sought at any point after you've been in the property for four months.
Okay, all right, brilliant. So we've talked about a little bit about what this means. Why would landlords choose to use the Section 21?
Okay, well, the Section 8 possession procedure, like I said, it requires on some form of wrongdoing on behalf of the tenant. The Section 21 doesn't. So the procedures that the landlord has to follow to gain possession are radically different between the two. Now, the main difference is that because the Section 8 possession procedure requires the tenant to have done something wrong, there's a number of grounds in there, and the majority of them are actually what are called discretionary, i.e. they're not mandatory. What that means is that a judge can actually refuse possession if it's sought under the Section 8 possession procedure, literally literally on a whim. They don't need too much excuse to do that. So, for example, if a landlord sought possession under Section 8, a judge could still refuse it, even if the tenant was in arrears, if they persistently pay their rent rates, if they cause antisocial behaviour, or upset tenants and neighbours. The judge actually could still refuse that possession. So the majority of the time when landlords, and when I say landlords, private landlords and social landlords, are looking to seek possession of a property for whatever reason, they would normally opt to use the Section 21 procedure just because it's more clear-cut and there's more certainty to it. If it's correctly served, and it is a sort of technical requirement, if it's correctly served, then possession is granted by law, okay. And the judge has to award possession if it goes to court.
So I guess if you are a private landlord and maybe you're changing circumstances and you've got to sell the property, or maybe a change in the law and things have changed completely now.
Haven't they just?
How they were like 12, 18 months ago. At the end of the day, this Section 21 could be used if the tenant didn't want to leave.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It doesn't. Section 21 possession procedure doesn't require the tenant to have done anything wrong. There's no accusation of wrongdoing. It's just the landlord making a statement, I need possession of the property back. As you stated quite clearly, there have been so many changes recently, and one of the biggest ones is the changes to taxation of private landlords. And that has been a real catalyst, to sort of force quite a lot of landlords into selling, because they will otherwise, in the next few years, they could find they're actually running properties that are unprofitable, that could be causing them to actually subsidise those properties. So if a landlord wants to sell his property and the tenants, they're not at fault, they've done nothing wrong, then he would seek possession under Section 21. It's perfectly legitimate, it's perfectly reasonable, and it's it was one of the introductions in the Housing Act 1988 that really sort of boosted the private rented sector.
And Section 21 has really come under attack from not just landlords, but also tenant support groups as well.
Well, that's right. Like I said, it's been in the press because politicians have started to use this term. But the term, as I understand it, no-fault eviction, was sort of coined by tenant support groups. And this time last year, in fact, we did a podcast about the English Housing Survey. And, the results of that were hugely positive. There wasn't really a great deal of negativity in there at all. And we just sort of touch upon an article in The Guardian that was entitled Landlords are turfing people out of their homes without reason, and it's completely legal. However, right, think about that headline. Now, how inflammatory is that? Landlords are turfing people out of their homes without reason. If a landlord needs to seek possession, there's always going to be a reason, okay? Just because there's no fault on behalf of the tenant doesn't mean there's no reason for the landlord to need possession. So he said the landlord may need to sell, he may need to develop the property, he may need to move into it himself. These are all reasons, they're perfectly legitimate and valid reasons. It's just it doesn't require the tenant to have done anything wrong. But tenant support groups have picked up on this and are saying landlords are doing it without reason. Rather than if you were making a legitimate statement, you're saying, well, landlords are doing it with no fault to the tenant. They're saying landlords are doing it without reason. Well, there's always a reason, and there's more good reasons now for landlords.
Well, I was going to say, actually, when you look at all the changes in the rules and regulations and, a number of landlords looking to sell their properties, I guess it's just going to add to the housing shortage.
It is. It's probably, it's potentially one of the things that could have quite a dramatic bad effect on the supply of houses to the private rented sector, because when the Housing Act came in the late 80s, it was hugely encouraging, especially for mortgage lenders, to see that, there's now a specific way that we, as mortgage lenders, on behalf of the landlord, if we have to, can gain possession of a property. So, for example, if the tenant wasn't paying their rent and the landlord couldn't afford to pay his mortgage and it fell into arrears, it gave the mortgage lender some certainty. They knew that the landlord could seek possession, or if there were problems that had nothing to do with the tenant, the landlord or the mortgage lender could seek possession of the property. And it was just a huge catalyst that pumped a lot of money into the private rented sector, and it's seen an awful lot of changes and also an awful lot of improvements since then.
Why do you think Jeremy Corbyn and her like are so against Section 21?
Jeremy Corbyn made a statement that in the next election manifesto that they would ban the use of no-fault evictions, the Section 21 possession procedure. And let's face it, they see it as a vote winner. If you use inflammatory headlines and inflammatory statements that people think, yes, that sounds terrible, awful. Landlords are turfing people out of their properties with no reason. Isn't that terrible? They're obviously appealing to that sector of society. But what we need to understand is that because landlords aren't doing it without reason, there's actually more reasons that have been introduced by this government, the changes that have been introduced by this government. There's more reasons for landlords to need possession of their property the majority of the time to sell it than there ever has been. So actually what we shouldn't be doing is discouraging social and private landlords from creating more housing and creating more private rented sector tenancies for fear of being landed in a position where there are problems and you do need to exit the sector, but you just simply can't.
And I guess, as we've said before, you can have all the rules and the regulations under the sun, but when it comes to it, it is that relationship between the landlord and the tenant, the communication and kind of working together through a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, the majority of landlords I know tend to have pretty good relationships with their tenants. And so the last thing a landlord would want to do is to serve a piece of paper on a tenant to tell them that they need possession of the property without probably having spoken to them beforehand. And given them the opportunity. You know, if the landlord wants to sell, it might be that the tenant wants to buy. You know, how fantastic is that? That would be great for a landlord to be able to sell the property to the tenant. Relationships are everything in this. It is a people business.
What do you think is the real cause of the rise in the use of Section 21?
Okay, so by focusing on Section 21 possessions, i.e., you know, these no-fault evictions, we're actually missing the point here. It's diverting attention away from the key issue that are causing the housing shortage. You know, we've seen in the last decade, we've seen stagnation of wages combined with rising house prices, chronic shortage of social housing. There have been an awful lot of changes to government welfare, the reforms, freezing housing benefit, introduction of universal credit. You know, these are all factors that are contributing to the difficulties faced by some renters. But none of these issues are actually caused by private landlords. Private landlords don't have any control over it. Landlords, we suffer the same economic constraints as everyone else. So if prices are rising, they hurt landlords as well as renters. And you know, rising, we are going to be seeing, really, you know, mortgage costs are going to be rising, maintenance costs, you know, all the rest of it. So by focusing on something to grab headlines, it's actually diverting attention away from these problems. And wouldn't it be nice if the politicians were actually addressing these problems rather than focusing on the most obvious thing that they can see in their sight. But
so to a degree then, for private landlords, all this is a bit of a red herring.
It is. Now, the Joseph Rowntree Foundation that we mentioned in one of our recent podcasts, they did a study quite recently and you know, they made a statement off the back of that study to say that the Section 21 procedure, or the use of the Section 21 possession procedure, had increased by more than 80% in the last 8 years. You know, as if to make that sound, that's a terrible thing. But of course, the size of the private rented sector has almost doubled over that period. So you would expect that the use of it would have, let's say, almost doubled.
Yeah.
If the size of the sector has almost doubled. But also these statistics that are used, you know, people tend to think landlord and they think private landlord, but of course it's social landlords as well. And in fact, social landlords are using the Section 21 possession procedure more and more and more as time goes by. They weren't able to use that possession procedure until some time ago. Now they can. So, you know, the use of this term, no-fault eviction, it makes it sound as if landlords are acting unreasonably and maliciously, and that's just not the case. Landlords want tenants, and we want good tenants. We want people to pay their rent, look after the place, enjoy living there. The last thing we would do is turf them out without reason. There might be a reason.
And I guess it comes back to that communication between the landlord and the tenant, because at the end of the day, you know, you've got to have that communication, haven't you? Because the tenant might have an agenda, you know, they might need to move on. They, as you said, they might be interested in buying the place.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
The landlord situation might change, the tax thing and all the rest of it that we've been talking about, several changes in that. I think it is a case that you can have all these section this and section that, but at the end of the day, it comes down to the relationship.
It does indeed. And you mentioned the fact that the tenant may have their own agenda. And, you know, this is something that really does happen. I mean, it's happened to me as a landlord over the last 20 years, where a tenant has actually asked, you know, please, will you evict me under the Section 21 possession procedure? Because, you know, I really want to get into social housing. And I've been told that the only way I can do that is if I'm evicted.
Yeah.
Please, you know, please evict me. Now, you know, that's not something that I've ever wished to do. And I wouldn't really want to get involved in that. But it does happen. But what we have to also remember is that councils are actually encouraging tenants who are suffering difficulties and are being put under perhaps the threat of possession. You know, they're encouraging them to stay put until it goes to court. If it goes to court, possession has to be sought under either grounds of Section 8 or under Section 21. So the landlords opt for Section 21 because it's the most certain process. So, you know, we have councils that are actually still telling tenants to stay put until it goes to court. And this is what's contributing to these statistics as well.
So with all this talk about Section 21, if it was actually scrapped, who would it hurt the most? Would it harm renters or landlords, or what do you think the situation would be?
Like a lot of these things, it's a double-edged sword. You know, it's always going to hurt both parties. And, you know, what you'll find is that the abolition of a Section 21 possession procedure would make it very difficult for landlords to gain possession. So that's going to discourage them from wanting to invest. It's also going to discourage the mortgage lenders from wanting to lend, because it's going to be a riskier scenario for them. So there's an awful lot of commentators on the private rental sector that actually believe that, if the Section 21 possession procedure was scrapped, it would exacerbate the housing crisis. And like I said, the Housing Act 1988 that came in was such a huge catalyst for change. It was a good thing. It created the private rented sector that we've got now. So by getting rid of one of the key elements of that, it would have potentially disastrous effects.
So it could actually end up, causing a problem with the housing shortage.
Yeah, I mean, whilst some people might argue there is a problem with people who are unable to stay in the homes that they're currently renting, imagine how bad it would be if actually the proportion of properties dropped dramatically and people just couldn't even access rented housing at all. It could potentially be disastrous. And these aren't the kind of decisions that you would hope governments would make without really properly understanding the situation.
So you're a landlord yourself. You work with a number of landlords. If you could sit down with the government and say to them, right, this is what you should be focusing on, what would you be talking to them about at the minute?
Well, what we know and what all the commentators on the private rented sector are telling us is that the private rented sector is growing. Okay, so we know it's sort of doubled over the last decade, and it's forecast to grow even more. In fact, the Royal Institute of Chartered Surveyors predicts that we're going to need another 1.8 million homes in the next sort of 7 or 8 years. Now, currently one in five households in the UK rents privately, but that's forecast to increase to one in four. So what we know is what we need is more homes to rent, not fewer homes to rent. So what we need is more private landlords, not fewer private landlords. We shouldn't be doing anything to discourage private landlords from growing their portfolios or entering the market. We should be doing whatever we can to encourage it. Now, one of the things that the government has fixated on over the last couple of years to try and sort of tackle the housing shortage is to try and encourage corporate investors to fill the gap between supply and demand. And they've done that in several ways, but one of the ways is that they provided a very cheap government-backed finance fund to lend money to corporate build-to-rent providers. However, the evidence of the success of that, it points to corporate investors not being able to create enough homes to meet the demand. And in fact, at the moment, build-to-rent, the corporate housing market, only accounts for about 2% of the housing market. So private landlords still account for 98%. And in fact, just last month, the Office for Budgetary Responsibility warned that there's going to be subdued growth in corporate residential investment. So if the government or the next government was looking to really boost housing supply into the private rented sector, what it needs to do is try and get more landlords on board and get the existing landlords to be investing more. Now, one of the things, well, this is one of the spurious things that is often missed in this debate, is that private landlords, by investing in housing, are actually boosting the supply of it. So major house builders tell us that they rely on private landlords when it comes to getting big building projects off the ground. There's one big house builder called the Barclay Group who recently said that these tax increases on private landlords are the main reason why they're not increasing their house building activity. Because traditionally, private landlords buy early in the development cycle and they provide the cash flow for the house builders to actually get on and build the houses. So we know that the investment into new housing by private landlords is one of the things that enables those houses to be built in the first place. So if what we're saying is we want to discourage people from investing into new housing, the growth of new housing, then it's just not going to grow by as much. So you can't have your cake and eat it. If the government acknowledges the fact that we want more houses and they need to be across a mix of tenures, then what we need is we need more people investing in housing to enable the house builders to be able to build more houses. It's not rocket science. Right. So one thing we shouldn't be doing is discouraging private landlords. We should be encouraging. At a time where the housing crisis is so closely linked with the ability of private landlords to provide early stage finance to house builders, I'd love to see the government introducing pro-growth tax policies. So rather than penalising, carrot and stick, use the carrot instead of the stick, encourage landlords through taxation policy to invest more, because that's the way more houses are going to be built.
Okay. Is there anything else that we need to know about this Section 21?
Well, there's so much to know about it, we could do a day's podcast. Yeah. I'd probably still not get through it. So if anyone listening to the podcast wants to get some more information, then the best thing to do is if they give me a call in the office on 01908 904 334, and I can talk them through the issues and see if there's anything we can do to help.
All right, excellent. Alex from the right place, thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Darren. Speak to you soon.